This is 4:55 on Wednesday, October 16th. Good morning. So, any questions? Start with? Clicks today is just attendance, so once you're signed in, that's fine. We won't have any more questions. So today, I'm going to finish talking about multicast, and then we'll talk about Project 2. Friday, we will have a discussion out of the other book about select and the use of select to handle multiple sockets, which you'll need for doing this. And then on Monday, it looks like we'll be able to move into talking about the link layer stuff a day ahead of time, because we should be finished with multicast by a few minutes from now. Right. So this is basically where we stopped last time, talking about multicast and the idea that what's different about multicast from broadcast is that with multicast, not all the routers are involved. Not all the routers are interested in the multicast, but even some routers that are not interested may have to be involved in distributing it. And so that's both a simplification in some ways and a complication in others. So there are two different ways of looking at multicast. One is that the idea is to create a tree within the overall connected graph of the network, a tree so that messages just go over each link one time, right? You don't want messages repeatedly going over a link. You don't want cycles, because that leads to problems about messages circulating forever. So two approaches are used. One approach is what's called the source-based tree, in which there's a tree rooted at each source within the multicast group. We call it a multicast group, is those hosts that are interested in receiving the multicast. In that case, the tree can be sort of optimally designed for that particular sending host. You want to have short paths to everybody. Another possibility is to use a tree that's common for all the senders in the multicast group, in which case it may be more optimal for some senders and not so optimal for other ones. And we'll talk about how those get created. Basically, it's just a rehash of what we talked about for broadcast. So, for a source-based tree, what would be the sensible thing to do? Find the shortest path to each receiver and share it amongst receivers that are along the same path. Dijkstra's algorithm works fine for this. Remember, Dijkstra's algorithm for finding shortest paths finds the shortest path to all the nodes, essentially. And so if there are common parts of that, you share them and rely on the routers to do the in-network replication of the messages. We talked about reverse path forwarding, in which the router, upon receiving a message, says, did it come from the shortest path? Did it get here according to the shortest path that I have to get back to the sender? And if so, use a flooding mechanism to send it outward. Or if not, ignore it. The problem here occurs if the network is not symmetric. So if the path from a router to the source is not the same as the path from the router to the, if the path from the router to the source is not the same as the path from the source to the router, such a rule is going to cause you to reject messages that you should otherwise accept. So that's one way of doing this. Now, it's kind of a flooding scheme, so messages get sent outward, they go everywhere, and we rely on what are called pruning messages to cut off distribution of things that are not needed. So if a router gets a multicast message down here and says, I have nobody who cares about that, it will send what's called a prune message back along the path on which it got it, and the routers upstream will take note of that and stop forwarding messages. Okay. For shared trees, the optimal tree might be considered to be a minimum cost tree. That's the tree that connects all the participants in the multicast group with the least weight. That's called a Steiner tree. That's a famous hard problem in computer science, one of those so-called NP-complete problems. You can find good heuristics for it in the graph theory sense of algorithms, but in practice, it's not really used. Instead, we use the center-based tree idea, where we send join messages to one node that's part of the tree, and as they pass through points where the tree already exists, you just connect things up instead of going on. So, we talked about that for broadcast. Here it is illustrated again. So, I guess there was... So, R6 is the center. If you want to join, you send a join to R6, and the edges that the messages take become part of the tree. All right, so then anybody who's on the tree, of course, can use the edges of that tree to send multicast messages, and they will get where they need to go. But, for example, node 2 here, well, it's not part of the tree. Node 6 here sends things. They cost 1 to there, 2 to there, and 3 to there. But node 3 here, its cost to get to everybody is sort of maximal. So, you know, it's just a simplification versus performance trade-off. And again, in the internet of today, we're talking about path lengths of what? 16, 20 hops, which are pretty common for just about everything. So I don't know that this matters a whole lot, you know, being optimal here. You don't want cycles. Cycles are really bad because cycles induce traffic that goes around and around and never goes away. But otherwise, maybe it's not such an important thing. So in the internet, the distance vector multicast routing protocol was defined. You need to get a sort of map of the history of the numbers. So 1075 is not that long after 800 and something, which is internet mail. So this is a pretty early standard for multicast routing. It uses the flood and prune approach to build source-based trees. And it uses routing tables that are specific to this. So I don't know of very much use of DVMRP these days. Details. Right. But I did want to mention again this idea of tunneling. I think we mentioned it for IPv6. I mentioned it briefly last time that even if you have routers that are not aware of multicast and how to handle multicast, you can build a collection of routers that do know about multicast and connect them using these tunnels in which you put multicast packets inside other IP packets and send them on. A great deal of the early work in multicast was done using something called the M-bone, sort of a backbone for multicast, an M-bone, that was implemented in exactly this way. These days, multicast, where do we see it? We see it in some of the sort of plug-and-play protocols. So, you know, so if somebody plugs a printer onto a network, maybe you can find it easily. Some of that's done at the link layer, and for sort of enterprise scale networks, you would want to be able to do that within the enterprise. Multicast in the wide, wide world, I'm not thinking of anything that I use that takes advantage of that. You know, some of the Skype multi-participant conferencing could take advantage of that, but I don't know that it does. And other sort of conference call things. Multiplayer gaming certainly could take advantage of it, but I just don't think it's widely implemented enough in the internet to be making much of a difference these days anyway. Although, with these tunneling ideas, you can get a certain distance to be able to do that. And then there's this thing called PIM, Protocol Independent Multicast. Take a look through that. Don't want to talk about it. So, we have reached the end of Chapter 4. What's important about multicast to know? Center-based trees, flooding, source-based trees, those basic ideas of multicast, and why multicast is good, and in what situations it's good. Why would you use multicast instead of unicast for something, if you could? Okay, any questions about that? All right. So, that... Alright, I think what I'll do is, nope, not that one. I think what I'll do is draw a picture first to introduce this project, and then we'll look at all the words, because the document doesn't have any pictures. So, what we're going to do is implement essentially virtual routers. And the routers aren't actually going to route anything. They're just going to build routing tables. So this is just the build routing tables part of routing. Going to use the distance vector approach to doing it. And we're going to emulate the idea of a router using just a process in whatever operating system you want to have. So what we're going to end up having is a bunch of processes. I'll start with a 4-node thing. Each of those is a process. They can all be running on the same machine for the purpose of what we're doing, or you could put them on different machines. It's up to you. And each one is going to have a port that talks to a particular port on each of the other. Well, let me draw it this way. So let me draw our network like this. I'm not used to enough this program to know how I change the color. Oh, it comes in different... Trust Microsoft. All right. So you get different thicknesses for different colors for some reason. So, here's the network that we're talking about. All right. That's the network around which we want to route messages. Each of the routers has a port that it uses for talking to its neighbor routers. So, for each of its neighbor routers, so these little dots are ports. And they're going to use UDP to send these messages. And then in addition, each router has a UDP port that is used to send it commands. So we have a little interactive program that you can use to send commands to a router. The kinds of things that the router, that the commands that you send to a router are things like change the cost of this link. Okay? Or print out your routing tables now. Or something like that. Those are the principal ones I can think of. So, the way I've drawn it here is kind of illustrative, but in a program, of course, what you're going to have is a table of sockets in each router that refer to those ports. Okay? So, programmatically, you've got a whole bunch of sockets in here, not just ports. And we're going to do something a little unusual in that we're going to use connected UDP sockets. Now, we talked before about the need with TCP to use the connect system call in order to create the shared state between the two implementations of TCP to allow the communications to occur. Connected UDP sockets are nothing so heavyweight. Connected UDP sockets just mean that the socket has both the source and destination addresses built into it, or configured into it, or something like that. So that when on a connected UDP socket, when you use the send system call, it will just go to where it's supposed to go. And when you use the receive system call, you will only get messages that came from the other address that it's connected to. Okay? So regular UDP sockets, unconnected ones, you have to use the send to system call, S-E-N-D-T-O system call, and supply the address where you want the message to go. That's the usual UDP way to send things. And similarly, a regular unconnected UDP socket, you use the receive from system call, and you get the data as well as the address from which it came. But with connected ones, you don't have to supply those extra parameters every time, that it's sort of already baked in. And that's convenient for this project, because that way you know that you're only getting messages that you're supposed to get on each socket. Okay, so we'll do that. But it does pose the problem that the code running in each router has to be able to say, receive a message and receive it from any of these sockets. Okay? That's the problem that as I said in the assignment, there are two reasons for using these connected sockets. One is the convenience it provides for you in knowing where things will go and where they come from. But the other reason, from my perspective, is that it forces you to use select, because you could do all this with only one socket and not have to use select. But I want you to use select, because that's what you need to learn from this project. So by doing it with connected sockets, you're forced to use select to handle the multiple sockets. So we'll talk about that on Friday. Okay? So this is the idea, and what's going to happen is we're going to exchange distance vector messages between the routers over these UDP connections, and the routers are going to build their routing tables in the according ways. Okay? It looks like you had a question. No. All right. So let's look at the actual description of this assignment, wherever it may be. Somebody know right offhand how to make this be full screen? Control L. It's not an improvement. You must remember that. That happened in another talk recently. So he said, oh, make it full screen. But that's not what we want. Okay, network of simulated routers implementing distance vector. Dynamic behavior distance vector, so we'll try to provoke it to do interesting things like counting to infinity and other things, and to learn about how to use select as well as timeouts using select. So, what language would you like to write it in? Certainly C, and I've provided some infrastructure for doing it in C that you'll have to reproduce if you do it in another language. And if somebody does it in another language and produces a nice package of infrastructure, please remind me that you did that so that I capture it and can make it available for students in the future. Yeah, Isaac?
I think C sharp supports all of this. Would that be all right to write?
That would be all right. The key thing is that you must do it with select. I think Java, even Java these days, can do it. When I originally created this, Java could not do that. You would have had to use multi-threaded implementation. Okay, so there's another approach to doing all this that's multi-threaded, but we're going to use select. So if you can do it with a select-like or poll-like system call, then that's fine. Happy to do that. And we'll talk about this infrastructure piece, so somebody builds good infrastructure, I'll capture it and make it available in the future. So no multi-threaded solutions. That's what I want to say. So this is complicated enough that Hawk needs your help in the form of instructions for how to build the code, as well as a make file or a project file or something that can be used to build it. The comments file is not about this stuff, rather it's about sort of the behavior of the routing stuff that you see. The output file is just the output from my test case, and of course the program files. Infinity is 64, which is four times as big as this is in RIP, so, you know, we're getting there. All right, so the trick here, this is unfortunately more complicated than it seems like it ought to have to be, because a big part of this is just figuring out what this emulated network is. What is the shape of it? What routers are in it and how are they connected? And that's what this infrastructure that I've built to give you is all about. There's a file readrouters.h and readrouters.c that will build a data structure that represents the routers, their connections, the port numbers that they use, and all that stuff, and we'll go over that. So this needs to be looked at in conjunction with actually looking at the files, and so we'll put that off. Okay, we're gonna save that for the time being. When the routers start up, they should initialize their routing tables with entries for all the directly connected neighbors, which they will know about from the information that's supplied in the files. And if there are things that are not neighbors, they will also know about those from what's in the files, or you can just dynamically add them when you start getting messages about them, either way. So this is kind of a poor little protocol in that the protocol that's used consists of messages that just say a particular destination costs me this much to get to. So each router is sending out updates. It's not sending out whole vectors. It's just sending out information about one router at a time, and you can process those easily. The format of the messages, just we're going to all use the same format for messages. It's the letter U. The router names are just also single letters here, so that's easy, and the cost is expressed as a decimal sequence of decimal ASCII digits, so you'll have to convert that into an integer for computations. So the neighbors send these update messages. The interactive program sends link cost change messages to routers. So you tell the router, you're going to send this to a particular router, and you're going to tell it that its neighbor now has a particular cost, and it will incorporate that into its routing information and send out any updates. We're not going to implement poison reverse, just so that we can attempt to trigger count to infinity problems. It's easy enough to do later if you want to. And there's some sort of output that goes along with these things that let somebody looking at the console of the router know what it is doing. So it prints those out whenever it makes changes. And you can also force the router to print its routing table for a particular destination by sending it a P message, or just sending it a P message with a destination, or just sending it a P message, cause it to print the whole thing. All right, so it's, you know, really very simple in terms of the user interface, but the fun is supposed to be in implementing distance vector. Okay, so in readrouters.c, there is a function create sockets that will build all the sockets. It will create them. It will bind them on the local end. It will connect them to the appropriate address for the other end and return you an array that contains all of those, so you don't have to do that. But you should look at the code to see what it does. And there's a readrouters.h file that you can include in your program to access those files, access those functions. This is about connected datagram sockets, which I just said. So this, let me see here. So all of these are connected datagram sockets. This one is unconnected because you want to be able to send message to it from wherever you are and have it accept them. So that's fine. Okay. So as I said, we need to find out about select in order to be able to process messages as soon as they arrive, and also implement this feature that says routers send out their entire distance vector to their neighbors every 30 seconds. So you need to be able to do that, and select has all the features you need to be able to do that. Practical issues. You're going to find that you have a lot of need to start up all these processes with a new version of code, run them, find that they don't work, shut them all down, and start them up again. So I strongly suggest having some scripts for doing that. Otherwise, you will give yourselves carpal tunnel syndrome from all the typing that you have to do. So you'll need to do that. And oh, the other thing that happens is if you fail to stop things, if you just let the broken ones keep running, they're going to be sitting using those ports that you need for the next run of the system. And so you won't be able to start up your next run unless you kill off the previous run. So again, having some scripts to do that will be good. And if you don't kill them off, they'll pile up and then you'll run out of memory and other bad things. You can read about RIP in RFC 1058. And then I think we'll look at the code, if I can manage to pull it off. Okay, so the file we were just looking at is this thing called Project 2 Discussion. That's the link. And the Project 2 link goes to the zip file. Which contains the skeleton. And hopefully I put the correct versions of the Project 2 description into the zip file as well. But the one that is on the website is the governing one, because if anything has to change, that's where I'll change it. I won't be able to change it in versions of the skeletons that you've already downloaded. Okay. Let's look at this. Oh, that's not good at all. So this is changelink. This is a Python program that will you can enter at a command line or something and say change the value of a link on a particular router to a new value. Change the cost of a link to a new value. And the way it does it is that it reads through the configuration files of the particular test system that you're running, figures out what the port number is and host number is that correspond to the router that you're talking about, and formulates a message 1, message 2, to send to both ends of that link. Right, so it will keep the link cost symmetric in both directions by sending to both Well, now I'm confused. All right, let me look at this. Read routers, N1 info, N2 info. That's broken. It doesn't do what I said it does. It sends the two messages both to the same host or to the same router, and it needs to send them to different routers. So, all right, work for me to do. Sorry about that. Similarly, the print tables Python script formulates a message to send to a particular router to cause it to print its tables, either with a particular destination in mind to get a single entry or just a P to get the whole thing. So you're not supposed to have to worry about these things, although I see that because change link is wrong, you would have to worry about them because it wouldn't do what you expected it to do. This one, I think, works okay. So it just makes a socket in Python. This is the way you do it. And then it sends the message to that destination. And it's all very simple. More complicated, and this will take a little study on your part, more complicated is this readrouters.c. This is the thing that will read the configuration of a network and build up the sets of connected sockets that are appropriate for each router. And it's supposed to be easy to use. You make a call to read routers that reads in the file that contains the description. And then I think it calls read links. But most important, what we want to do is know about this create connections call that you pass the name of the current router, the name of the router that's running that's running now. And remember, the router names are single letter names. So this thing then goes through and collects all the information that's been read in from the file. And what does it do? Figures out who's what, and eventually gets down to this thing called create socket. And create socket is where the socket calls happen. So create socket builds up the call to socket. To get the socket, and then it calls bind, passing that socket and the local and address, which comes out of partly the file, and then it calls some things to gather up information about the other end, and calls connect. All right, so it's a datagram socket. We've used both bind and connect on it. A little bit unusual, but that's the way we're going to do it. Okay, so you'll need to sort of take a look at and see how that works, but that's all you need to read in the files. Now let me show you what the files look like, because if you're writing in some other language, actually, let's look at this one. It's just trying to run it, and since it's in a zip file, it doesn't give me the opportunity. Okay, so this is the router's file. This is produced for each different test case, each different test network. And it simply says the name of the router, the single letter name, and the host that it's running on, and I always just do it with localhost, and the base port number for all the ports that that router is going to use. Okay, so it's going to use this one and a bunch more counting upward from this point. Then in a file associated with each individual router, Y. Config file. Sometimes I just hate Windows. So this is the file for router A. It says that it's connected to router B with a link of cost 7. Now let me think. It's connected to router B with a link of cost 7, and that the offset at node A from the A's base port is 1, so this one is going to use port 20,001, and the offset from B's base port is also 1, so that port number is going to be 20,011, based on what we saw in the previous thing. Okay, so this scheme is sufficient. It's not maybe terribly elegant in terms of the expression that it gives you for the routers, but the idea is that the readrouters.c code hides all the detail of this from you, and you just get back a table that says router, to talk to router B, I use a particular socket, and that's all I need to know. and that messages from router B will come to me on that socket, and that's all I need to know.
Yeah.
I see. So is it required for us to use these files for implementation?
Let me show you something else. There's another file in the directory called links, and this is the thing that generates those other files. So A and B are connected by a symmetric link of cost 7. All right, and B and C are connected by a if you want to do something that sort of has the same effect as all that other crud in terms of producing a separate socket for each router to talk to every other router, that would be fine. This tells you what the specification of the network is that you're supposed to be running on. Okay, and there's another Python program in here called generate test that generates the links and router, or the routers and individual router config files from that links file. Okay, so again, it's not something you're supposed to have to worry about, and you can make your own networks by just generating a links file and running this on it. So I don't know. I've never come up with any better way to make it as easy as possible for folks to do all this, but. You know, if you're really ambitious, then sure, and tell me about it so that I can make it better later for other people. Okay? So next time we'll talk about select. I think there's a couple more things I want to say about this read routers thing in what order you're supposed to call things in. I think I haven't fully documented that yet for you. And I need to fix the change link thing so that it works right. So I'll do that. So anyway, take a look at that. Try to get a gist of the whole project before next time by reading through the description and bring any questions about that.
I'm going to take concurrent programming next semester, uh-huh. But it says that it's 1 credit on the... I'm pretty sure it's 3 credits, because it is for 3.
It is 3.
It's like the time slot.
The time slot is set up for 3 credits.
Okay.
I will thank you for letting me know that the challenge now is, if I report it today, will it be fixed by the time classes start?
Last
year it took until the middle of the semester before it got fixed.
Oh my goodness. So this has happened before?
Yes.
Wow.
I don't know why.
Blame Zeus.
Yeah, we could blame Zeus, I suspect a person is behind it, ultimately.
Yeah, I figured it was. It didn't seem like a class that would be 1 credit.
So I will thank you for letting me know, because I think last year maybe I didn't know about it until classes started, but It certainly was a problem for people who were trying to graduate and have enough credits, and you know, that's crazy. So,
okay. All right, good.
Thank you for letting me know. And I don't know why, because 580 classes are all, or 483 classes are always 3 credits. They're never anything other than that. So, isn't even like it's a reasonable mistake. It's an unreasonable mistake.
Hopefully they fix it quick.
Yep. But, you know, go ahead and register for it and know that you will get 3 credits for it when it's done, one way or another. Thank you.